that one. You can find the call-in numbers on our schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. And finally, you can call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address, and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening. Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty.
Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Thursday. It is the last day of our broadcast week. It is the 2nd of September in the year 2004. And today was probably one of the most beautiful days that we have had all this summer, and I mean that seriously. The air was dry, and it was warm, but not humid, of course, and it was just absolutely gorgeous. I want to begin here with our spiritual message. This is from a box of cards I have. They're quotes, sayings from A Course in Miracles, and every now and then I pull a card for a message. And this is what I pulled, and this is so appropriate. This is from the text, page 278. It says, those who remember always that they know nothing and who have become willing to learn everything will learn it. I want to do that one more time. Those who remember always that they know nothing and who have become willing to learn everything will learn it. Alan Watt, thanks for being back with us tonight.
Yes, nice to be here.
Mm-hmm. How are you today, this evening?
Not so bad.
And how is Murphy's Law doing with you lately?
Oh, Murphy's always hanging around.
Yeah. Well, Alan, yeah. I don't believe last night when we finished there was anything left hanging where we were going to start. So where would you like to start this evening?
Oh, boy. Well, I think people should realize that the world today is simply a stage which was planned eons ago, basically.
I'm sorry. Your volume is low for me again, by the way.
Yeah?
You said it was planned what?
Eons ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And you don't change something overnight that's been working steadily and planning steadily and enforcing steadily. You cannot change that in a single lifetime. And that's what people generally think they have to do. The only reason they think they must change it in their lifetime is because that which they're used to, which is the system they were born in, is now changing again, and they're fighting to try to keep what they think was their system.
Or, you know, because I've said this myself in the past, to take our country back.
Yeah.
To what does that mean?
Yeah.
go back to the way it used to be? It's never.
Yeah.
Than the way it should be, Alan?
Never. It didn't even begin that way. In fact, nations themselves were part of the plan. Sovereign nations were part of the plan, a stage in the plan, to serve, again, another purpose, a stepping stone towards, ultimately, internationalism and one world government system.
Yes, and you were talking about the trilateral plan with the Americas being one and the European Union being a second. And then, would you explain that again? I think we talked about this not on air, didn't we?
Yeah, that's right. Karl Marx wrote about this in the 1840s. And Karl Marx was a nobody at the time. He was a front man who was paid by the Rothschilds to live in London after being booted out of Germany. And he came up with the Communist Manifesto and a few other books with his friend Engels. And he actually wrote about a world to come that they were working for, which would comprise of three basic trading blocks, which would consist of a United Americas, a United Europe, and a Pacific Rim conglomeration under a supreme world government. And it's no coincidence that we're on the very verge of it being announced today. It's been steadily worked at. Capitalism was an artificial creation. Its antithesis, communism, was a necessary part of capitalism and the aims of capitalism to create the new system, the synthesis of them both, which is a dominant elite running the world under a communistic type bureaucracy running the rest of the people beneath them.
And today they're calling it democratization.
That's correct.
They're democratizing the nations.
Yeah. And this was planned a long, long time ago. And it started an awful long time ago. People at one time lived in tribes. And tribes were the closest system you could have to any kind of natural living. And, of course, with the advent of money, which was the first truly artificial creation, before you had barterers, people would barter for what they wanted. Now you have a third man, a third person who comes in and says this coin is worth that sack of wheat, you know. And for a small fee, a percentage of your wheat, I'll make this transaction for you. And once this third party came in, he eventually, obviously, ended up controlling the guys with exchanging sacks. And it's been that way ever since. From then, they had to create the first city. And the legends of Nimrod, the city builder, everyone pretty well knows. The reason the Masons praise Nimrod, or for what he stands for, is he created the first artificial system of human living, which was bringing people off the rural areas, creating a city which was walled, so they were walled in, and then creating a bureaucracy and taxing people outside of the city, because people in a city produce nothing. They can't even feed themselves. And so the artificial ends up lording over the natural, and it's still the same way today.
And what timeline and where was Nimrod?
Well, Nimrod is legendary. It's pre everything, really. It's half myth and half legend.
Okay.
You know, it's prehistory, really.
In other words, before Sumer?
Yeah, even before Sumer, because all these legends were borrowed even to the time of Sumer. And we know that there's another bunch called the Hurrians pre-existed the Sumerians. And they apparently also had the trade routes, which Sumer eventually took over.
And was Sumer supposed to be about 6,000 years ago?
Roughly about that, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And once again, Sumer appeared on the scene as a complete basic system. It didn't evolve into a system. It appeared out of nowhere with a complete system of trading with money, with even receipts, baked receipts you could have, and forms of checking accounts and priesthoods to deal with, who did all the work that the modern bureaucrats did. and they were basically they ran the trading for the known world at that time, but they were also a form of governmental bureaucracy for the rest of the whole world as well. I don't think much has changed.
I was thinking about those caravans.
Mm-hmm.
Were they back in that time?
Yeah.
The caravans of camels that had those trading routes that...
Yes. Uh-huh. Yep, and they had them before Sumer because there were there so many of the Hurin or Harappian peoples' old dwelling places that pre-existed the Sumerian trading routes, and they also had a complete route from Egypt all the way to China, and that was pre-Sumer.
And what race would the Hurrians have been?
It's difficult to say. We know, for instance, that the original Sumerians, who may have taken over, were dark-haired primarily. In fact, one of their prayers to their god, Enki, was to thank Enki for making them the dark-haired people who ruled
mm-hmm.
over the fair-haired. But then they got invaded themselves by other Arabic peoples called the Akkadians, and they merged with the Sumerians, and eventually the Akkadian language took over.
The what? I'm sorry.
Akkadian or Akkadian.
Akkadian, okay.
Yeah. So, but the original Sumerian peoples were definitely dark-haired.
The Sumerians... I'm sorry, go ahead.
That doesn't mean that their kings and queens were.
Yeah.
Because they found, even when they dug up what turned out to be the local garbage dump, they found deep down some of the royal graves there. And once again...
In the rubbish dump, they found royal graves?
Yeah. The later peoples had turned it into a rubbish dump.
Oh.
But they did find some gold articles. They did find some amazing tombs where a few hundred peasants or servants were killed alongside the royalty.
So they could serve them?
Yeah. And there was no signs of struggle, so they think it all took poison of some kind. But once again, the queen especially, her wigs were found, and they were all made of the local hair, the people, but if you think that her hair may have been a more fair color, her own particular hair.
That's intriguing.
Yeah.
Mysterious.
Yeah, but I don't think it's ever been any different. To say the present royalty of Europe lord over peoples, and yet if you really trace their ancestry, they never interbred with the native people.
With the what, native people?
Yeah.
It seems that things that I've read, that the old gods, like Quetzalcoatl,
yeah.
that he was described as a white man?
Yeah.
Coming out of the ocean?
Mm-hmm.
And so many of them describe their gods as white.
Yeah. That's right.
So, Alan,
mm-hmm.
here I go again. I don't know which question to ask first. Never mind, because they're all gone right now. I haven't been writing them down.
Yeah.
The Hurrians, the gods.
The plan is so old that you cannot change it in a generation, because the system you're living in and been born in is complete all around you as a system. And although Lenin himself gave a lot away in his writing because he could afford to, and Lenin was just another front man for the antithesis, basically.
Who's that?
Lenin.
Yeah, when you were talking about Karl Marx and his writings, he was a front man too.
All of them, yeah.
In other words, what he was writing wasn't his plan.
No, no. In fact, it was another 20 or 30 years before they even put Karl Marx's name on the Communist Manifesto.
Oh, okay.
He was so low down on the tiers, you know, that it wasn't worth mentioning his name at first.
A twig on the family tree?
Yeah, that's right.
His name was
Karl Marx Mordecai Levy.
One of the questions that popped into my mind as we were talking about these rulers, you know, and they're white skinned or fair skinned, they have light hair or red hair, blue and green eyes, and now you're saying all the way back to Sumer and before, there's evidence that that's what it was.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. One of my questions is, why is the white race being annihilated today? And is the white race, and maybe this would have to be an opinion, maybe an educated guess, but is the white race today part of that white race of all long, long ago?
I don't think, I think this royalty that keeps cropping up was a separate race in itself. Going back even further to Greek legends and some of the Arabic legends, when they talk about the troglodytes, which is just a Greek term for these cave or underground dwellers, these particular creatures were pretty well albino, complete albino. Now, whether the white race was sort of bred off of that, it's hard to tell. It's possible.
Would you describe to our listeners what you described to me out of that real old book on Freemasonry?
Yeah, that
there were different types of beings that were being described in that book.
Yeah, there were the tree dwellers, we claim, that hopped around in the trees and ate the fruit and so on. Some of them would come down to kill animals. And then you had these, again, troglodytes that would rush out of the caves when the animals had been slain by the tree dwellers, chase off the tree dwellers, and then drink the blood off the animals that were killed. And these creatures, these troglodytes, were supposed to be very completely ruthless to every other species.
And describe them the way it described them.
Well, they were...
They had no lower jaw, did they?
That's right, yeah. They were very thin creatures, very white, and completely white.
Spindly?
Spindly.
Lacking in musculature?
Yeah. And it's funny because I remember reading a scientific magazine many years ago, saying what the future man might be like if science was to take its full course and go into artificial food or food that's liquefied and goes straight through the body, basically.
So we wouldn't need a lower we wouldn't need a lower jaw.
You wouldn't need a jaw at all, really. Yeah, you've got nothing to chew. You would have spindly legs because you wouldn't have to exercise if you were taking long voyages in spacecraft, for instance, which is one of the theories of the future, and how this man would look like. So, and it put me in mind when I read this Masonic book of that very thing.
Mm-hmm.
These creatures, it's hard to see how they got to that stage by themselves. You would think that everything else would have eradicated them. But again, it's thought that they may have had advanced weaponry, and that's how they managed to survive.
Oh, thank you, because I was the thought that occurred to me is if they were so spindly and weak,
mm-hmm.
and then how in the world would they have the strength to force away the people that did the killing?
Yeah.
And
they were ruthless, apparently.
And a slit for a mouth because they were just blood drinkers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds very familiar, doesn't it, Alan?
Oh, it does, yeah. And I think that's where all the old vampire films come from. I think the vampire stories are sort of Masonic tongue-in-cheek for this, maybe a very real thing that happened long ago.
Did it say anything about whether they had hair or not? Head hair or body hair?
I can't remember that.
I don't recall you reading about it either, but as you were describing them reading that, I can recall that what I was picturing were the pictures we see of these so-called aliens.
What I do remember, too, is that they made a funny hissing sound when they spoke to each other. It was a high-pitched hissing sound rather than a normal vocal sound.
That's interesting. Do you have any thoughts or understanding of why today, and it does seem that it's intentional extremely, why is the white race being eradicated, mixed all up with the other colors?
Well, if you go back to the Brahmin legend of the north of India, and the Brahmins there claim that they are descended from the man from the previous age, that they came through the last catastrophe. They claim that the Black Sea, where the Black Sea is today, was a testing ground where different types of animals and humans were created.
The Black Sea area?
The Black Sea. It was actually a valley at one time. And they claim it was a big laboratory. And these being called the scientists were experimenting with different types. And eventually the experiment got out of hand and the people began to eat each other. And then so they flooded the whole valley, and that became the Black Sea. And I think man is far, far older than what we know. Far older. And I'm pretty certain that if science, for instance, today, you can see where they're going with their modifications and their adaptations of the human species for other castes in the future, then it would be obvious that if we'd gone through this before, they would have done the same thing in a previous age. They would always get to the same point. They would have to change and adapt and so on, exactly as Plato talks about in the Republic, creating new types of humans for different tasks, special hybrids. But the Brahmins do say that was on the go prior to the previous catastrophe, world catastrophe.
I'm sorry, Alan.
Yeah?
Well, no, you didn't. I had a call come in here.
Uh-huh.
And so everything that you just said I did not hear, but this was Annette calling, and she couldn't understand. She said that even the American Indians knew the difference between the pale face,
uh-huh,
and that it's a seed line and it's the seed of Cain, and why didn't you bring this all out?
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it doesn't mean it's a seed of Cain, you know.
Yeah. Well,
you can't bring Plato's cave along through everything with you. Eventually, sometimes you have to leave the cave behind, or you associate all brand new information back to the cave.
Yeah.
But in your previous theories, you see, the mark of Cain was circumcision. It wasn't a people; it was a brotherhood. Circumcision was the mark, and that's how all Arabs, and even today some of the high sheikhs still do this. They put their hand under the person killed, as they say, to see if he was a brother, and the lowly person would swear allegiance to his chief that way in Arabic countries, and he'd swear it literally on his future generations. They're all Semitic peoples, you know.
They're all what?
Semitic peoples.
Semitic people.
That's where the word seminary comes from, semen.
Oh my.
And that's where it comes from. And you you swear, you know, oath by literally grasping another person's penis. And that was the ancient part, the ancient law structure of all the old Semitic cultures.
So I would like to go back for just a moment. You're saying that the mark of Cain is actually a circumcision.
A circumcision.
And that was real old, and that was even before the Bible.
Oh yeah, it was. In fact, the Egyptians were also circumcised.
Well, you know, this has never made sense to me in the Old Testament, where it says, you know, Adam and Eve were the first people. They had their sons Cain and Abel,
yeah.
And then Cain slew Abel and then went to a land and took himself a wife.
Yeah.
But people who are into the bloodline, you know, that the whites are really the chosen of Jehovah or Yahweh,
mm-hmm.
That is one of the big things that this is all hanging on, I believe.
Yeah.
So.
But that's their problem.
Well, yes. Although it would be nice if it could be even at least.
In Genesis, there are two creations. There's the first creation, and again, this is all mystic. If you understand the esoteric, you understand.
I think it would have to be.
And you have the void and so on, and the darkness and the deep, which is the abyss. And then you have eventually the Garden of Eden, and you have the first creation, and it's man and woman, and in his image he created them. And then you read further on and it says there was no one to till the soil, so he created Adam and then Eve. So there's two creations there, and that's the secret between the rulership dynasties and the peasant laborer. Adam is an allegory form for the purpose of Adam and Eve.
It's an allegory.
Yeah.
Well, if that makes a whole lot more sense, because I don't know how somebody could justify in their mind that this all started with Adam and Eve in Cain and Abel, the first people, when evidently they're, according to the story itself, I mean, I'm just what the story says, that he went and took a wife.
Yeah.
I can remember when I was 15 and reading the Bible, and that was one of the things that grabbed me.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, well, where did these other people come from then?
Yeah. And of course it says in the Bible to go out and repopulate the earth. Repopulate. Which meant it was populated before.
Yeah.
So really this whole part of the story starts with the beginning of the next age, in other words, after a previous catastrophe, when not everybody was killed off, but a lot were.
There have been books written about the seed of Cain.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course Cain is another, it's all allegory, because you think about Abel, and what it means as well, and into the English language, because all the mystery religion eventually was adapted into the English language, which was again a Masonic creation, you might say. But the word cannibal is part Cain and Abel, you see. And Cain, of course, Julie's brother, old God didn't know what was going on, so we had to ask him where his brother was.
Right.
And
did he say, "I ate him"?
So basically you're left with the conclusion that he was eaten. But it means more than that. It also means, and it's the clever part of it, the killing of the natural person who herded animals, who looked after themselves pretty well. The one that was favored by the Creator. Not the God, but the Creator. And...
I'm sorry. Okay, hold that.
Uh-huh.
Because I'd like you to repeat it, because I really didn't get what you said, and we'll expand on this after this break.
Yeah.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, will you please get your pen in hand and get a paper handy, because at the break you will be given my address, and I don't know how to say it any differently, that without your help the broadcast will not stay on the air. I would like it if we were within $1,000 or $2,000 of the airtime bill? We're not. And we're holding it, but we're not. We aren't really chipping it away. At least that $7,000 here that needs to be taken care of.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Okay, and before we pick up where we left off before this break, let me give you Alan's address, folks, reminding you that there are two booklets available that he had put together some time ago. And there is a lot of information in the book, and it isn't just written stuff. There are pages, photocopied pages, out of very, very old books, most of which we probably have never seen, and I don't know how we would go about doing that. So for those of you who were not listening when Alan was on with us some time ago, because we actually did 5 weeks in a row, 20 hours of this type of, but it followed a pattern, and we really can't go back and do it all over again. But I believe that the booklets would really help to have you some confirmation for you about this information that you're hearing that sounds so audacious and almost unbelievable. Alan's address, if you want to order the booklets, they're $20 each. And you should either send FRNs cash, or you should send international postal money orders. Alan is in Canada, and he cannot cash your personal check or a regular money order. It has to be an international postal money order. Do not send it to Alan Watt, please, on the mail. Send it to Box Holder. Mail it to Box Holder. Site 4, that's S-I-T-E, excuse me, Site 41, Box 4, and that is in Astaire, Ontario, E-S is in Samuel, T is in Thomas, E-S-T-A-I-R-E as in Edward, Astaire, Ontario. The postal code is P as in Paul, 3. E as in Edward, 4. N is in Nancy, 1. So it is P3, E4, N1, and that is Canada. Be sure to mark it Canada. And by the way, I had sent mail to a listener in Canada, and I put a 37-cent stamp on it, and it came back for postage. So you better check, folks, and see how much. I don't recall how much more I had to put on. I stuck another 37-cent stamp on it and sent it off, so do be sure and check the postage on that. I forgot to tell you that. Once again, it's a box holder, Site 41, Box 4, Astaire, Ontario, P3, E4, N1, Canada. And that would get you $20 each for the two booklets that Alan has put together. And I want to remind you about our website. First of all, to remind, or if you happen to be a new listener, we broadcast four nights a week, Monday through Thursday, broadcast from WWFAR Internet Radio. We are live streamed. You can listen to the broadcast live at sweetliberty.org website. You can also listen on shortwave at 5.070 megahertz. We are also on the satellite, and I still haven't got that together hanging in front of me to give you the coordinates of the C-band satellite. And then we are broadcast also by micro-broadcasters on AFM stations, although I've only one time ever heard from a listener on a micro-listening on FM station, and I really, truly would love to hear from you, or if you're listening on AM, because I understand that there are two stations that are picking up, either two or three AM stations that are picking up the broadcast from First Amendment Radio. And if you are, I would love to hear from you, just to know that there is somebody out there listening on those that we are being broadcast. My address, once again, while we're at it here, is Jackie Patru, P-A-T-R-U, P.O. Box 190, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, M-I-L-L-E-R-T-O-N, Pennsylvania, 16936. And the reason that this broadcast isn't stopped every 8 or 9 minutes with commercials is because it is listener sponsored, and that would be you, folks. That would be you. If you're a listener, you appreciate or value the information, you might want to come forth and be part of those others who are trying to keep this broadcast on the air. And Alan, thank you for your patience here, dear.
No, it's all right.
Yeah, we had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first of all, I just want to do a little recap that the story you're saying, the story in the Old Testament of Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, is allegory. The two creations is meant one for the elite and one for the worker bees, I guess you would call it.
Right.
And those are the ones that were supposed to go out and till the field and everything?
Yeah, do all the tilling of the soil, yeah.
Uh-huh, and you said that the Cain and Abel, the whole story is an allegory,
yeah.
And that Cain, Abel, actually stands for cannibal, and that the evidence in that story is that they're saying that Abel ate Cain, or...
Cain ate Abel.
I mean, Cain and Abel, yeah.
And again, it's to do with what they tell you pleased the deity. The sacrifices that Abel gave to the deity were acceptable, but the ones that Cain gave were unacceptable. And
what did Cain give?
Well, Cain was a farmer who grew grain. And the meaning behind it all was that he had to know basic sciences to fulfill his occupation. Whereas Abel was a natural sort of nomad, where he went with his tribe, with his animals wherever they grazed. So he lived more naturally. So it's really a war between the man who lived naturally and the one who had to use science to make his crops grow. You see? So science conquered the natural man. It's really what it means here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it means. And
you know, you talk about thinking in the cave, and even when new information comes,
yeah,
it's sort of like thinking in the box, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
It's a term that is used today.
Mm-hmm.
Getting outside of the box instead of thinking in the box. I received a letter and information from Annette, and I don't say this meanly at all, because I reread it tonight, this evening.
Mm-hmm.
And I reread the information that she had sent, and what she had, it was a letter that she had sent to somebody, and she sent me a copy of it, and she was giving a bit of a background on her own progress, if you would. and she had been a Mormon, and then she became involved in metaphysics, studied metaphysics, and she said as she was reading the Bible that she... Folks, we're not taking calls this evening. I'm sorry. But anyway, she said that as she was reading the Old Testament, she wondered how those terrible people could be God's chosen. And that led her into the understanding where she is now, see, and where so many people are, instead of realizing that our Creator does not choose special... The real Creator, true Creator, is not going to say, I'm going to take you to be my people, and I'm going to be you to you a God. But instead of rejecting that, then what happened was that she began to study the bloodline stuff and probably studying under people and reading information. Hello?
Yes, can I ask a question? Alan?
Yeah.
Go ahead, yes, dear.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to know, in the Bible, you were talking about, what is it, Genesis? Is it, where the Lord said to Cain, when he was chased out, he told Cain, he says, I'm going to put a mark on you so that everyone will be able to recognize you. And Cain was really upset. He says, if you do this, whoever will see me will want to kill me. And I don't know what happened after that. They sent him away. Anyway, is this mark what I see today in the Jewish people? You know, the yellowish skin, the coarse hair, you know, the large ears, the gargoyle-like face, the large mouth, you know, sort of Sarah Jessica Parker, Barbara Streisand,
yeah.
The hook nose.
Yeah.
I just want to know, does he feel that that's what that mark is for us to
okay.
know and learn from?
Well,
thank you.
Yeah,
bye.
Okay, honey.
Okay,
bye. Yeah, she has to get her radio back on for your answer, Alan. Maybe she didn't hear you say that the whole story was an allegory.
Yeah.
Do you want to address
well,
her?
It isn't just that. I mean, the serpent, for instance.
I hope this is coming out on my tape. Because I'm getting almost nothing on you.
Okay, the serpent, for instance, according to the higher Masons, was represented a wise man from a previous age, and he became the father of Cain. So Cain was of a bloodline different again from Abel. And Adam was not his father. That's what they mean by that.
By the serpent?
A high priest. A high priest from a previous age. That's what it really means.
That's how it translates?
That's what all the mystery religions claim, yeah. You know.
Okay.
The higher you go. And, of course,
okay.
In other words, he was injected with the intelligence, the scientific bent, you might say.
Abel or Cain?
Cain. Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Cain. Oh, that's right. Cain slew Abel.
Yeah.
And Abel was...
And, of course, once Cain left and chased out... And by the way, in the older manuscripts, they tell you that they all wore aprons. And that's representative of the present Masonic apron.
Yeah.
That's why the mark had to be covered.
And the mark being the circumcision.
The circumcision.
So the mark...
I mean, let's be honest here. If a creator made you perfect in every way in his own likeness, why would you then demand that you cut a bit of your skin off, you know?
Yeah, in a very sensitive place.
This is a different purpose altogether.
And so her question was about the appearance of the Jews
yeah,
today.
I've got a train going by from China. They go across Canada every day and brings a... Costco, all of its goods, you know.
Costco.
Hold on a second, so I suppose.
Yeah, a Costco train, okay.
But
did you hear what I asked, Alan?
No, I'm.
Well, I just wanted you to. I guess you did answer it, but she had asked if the mark was the appearance of the Jews today.
No, because it wasn't Jews. In fact, there were no Jews at the time of Cain and Abel.
Right.
pre-existed all of that, and circumcision was common amongst all the so-called Semitic peoples. The Egyptians, when they fought the peoples of the sea, who invaded from somewhere in the Aegean, were surprised to find that these enemies also were circumcised, as they were. So circumcision was a common thing, because they all shared basically a common religion, even though the deities had different names.
Yes, and it was the same priesthood that were writing these religions.
I am certain of it, because since we had international trade in those days, and you had what the trade routes also went to priests, the priests had to know that all the religions that the different people were worshipping were in fact the same religion, under different names. So you always had a trinity of a father, mother, and the son, always. Of course, we gave them different names, and so the Egyptians would never think that the guys to the north across the water there were worshipping the same deities.
Yeah.
But they were in fact. But Cain, anyway, supposedly his father was you might say Lucifer or a high priest from a previous age. And because he had the superior gene, this great inbreeding thing again, he became the first artificer or worker in metals and made tools and weapons and scientifically created things.
So you're saying that he would have learned that through the priesthood?
Yeah, he would have learned it, absolutely. And again, the inference is that he inherited that type of mentality to understand it.
So the what today, what people, if you know this, are considered the people who carry the mark of Cain is it the Jews?
There are some, definitely a lot actually, higher up ones. But really it's one separate people who are at the top of the tree in almost every country, regardless of what they claim to be.
Yeah.
They're separate altogether.
And in other words, the elite of the Jews are not of the same bloodline as the average Jews today.
No, I mean, the average Jew today does not marry his sister or his niece, you know.
Uh-huh.
But when you look at royalty, for instance, that claim to be, well, the Queen is the head of the Church of England, a Protestant church.
Yeah.
And yet, look at the inbreeding they do.
She's got a real horse face.
Well, some of them have been some disasters there with Queen, Princess Anne. She liked horses, and she had a nice smile alongside her horse. They kind of matched each other. But Prince Charles looks like Akhenaten of Egypt.
And he has very little of a chin, doesn't he?
Little chin, long neck, big hips.
Yeah.
So it really, you have
flat butt.
And interestingly enough, too, Charles said at one point that he was a descendant of David, and then he said he was also a descendant of Noah. And the whole allegory of Noah is the same elite coming through another disaster and surviving and starting the mystery all over again of how you dominate the ordinary people. That's the reality of Noah. Noah was chosen to survive only because he had not outbred of his family lineage. He'd inbred only. He was perfect in his generations. So you have this elite coming through, you know.
And it's starting to come out today, although I think a lot of people don't see it. But I have an article. It was in a newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And it was a group of rabbis who actually made the statement that there is no historical truth in the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, nobody seems to pick up on that, Alan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact is, in no one else's history was there even a place called Israel. It's only in the Bible. When you look at the histories of Greece, who ruled that area at one time before the Romans, they called it Edomia. That the whole land was called Edomia. And then when the Romans moved in, it was basically the same, you know.
Would I be pronouncing that Idumeans? Was that the same thing you just said?
That's right.
Okay. I just had to make sure I was on the same page with you.
And interestingly, a lot of them have names that were actually Idumean. Like Jack Elam. Remember Jack Elam, the actor?
Nope.
He did a lot of old westerns. But his, you know, Elam was basically the capital of Edomia at one time, and yet he was a Jew. So there's a big controversy about was there ever a historical Israel.
Well, historical Israel, actually, I think, isn't it because it's my people Israel? I mean, it was actually tribes loosely.
There was no tribes. It was Israel. Israel. It was the Trinity.
That's where Israel came from, yes.
And it was a religion.
Isis, Ra,
all over the area, you see. And that came from Egypt itself.
So these tribes, these, how many ever there were, the lost tribes of Israel, that is not what we think it means.
Not at all. It's astronomy, in fact. It's astronomy and astrology. It's the 12 houses of the zodiac. And if you look at the blessings that Jacob gives on the sons, you'll see the allegory within each blessing of a symbol of a zodiac, of one of the houses of the zodiac. And Dan, of course, he's the eagle. He's also the serpent because the eagle basically rises. Aquila rises opposite Draco, which is the old serpent. That used to be where the old North Star was at one time. Now it's Polaris. But each symbol in another tribe is like a lion. Judah is like a lion. That's Leo. Each blessing is actually one of the houses of the zodiac. So they never existed as a people, and the rabbis all know this. You know, they're all well aware of this. It's zodiacal. There were three primary groups in existence in ancient times of priests, and one was solar, one was lunar, and one was stellar, the stars. Now, I'm sure they all came under a higher authority above them all. But that's how they ruled all the peoples. It's entirely zodiacal. And the blessings themselves are that. They are the symbols of the zodiac.
And the rabbis know all this?
Oh, they know it all, yeah.
So why do you think they came out publicly and admitted that there is no historical truth in the Old Testament?
I think now is probably the right time because...
they want to destroy all religions and mold them into the one?
That part of it too, sure. I mean, the same with the Christian guys. They're doing... The ecumenical movement is doing the same job to destroy that, you see, at the same time. And that's well financed too.
But what...
They always do things at the right time when it's not... You see, as Masons, once a temple has fulfilled its structure, you knock it down to build a new.
And they're knocking the pins right out from under all of the people who have been so steeped, Jews and Christians in the Bible.
Yeah.
And... You know, I was talking to one of our listeners, very fascinating and intelligent man, but what he made a statement, he said if you have a bottle and you empty it, or let's say, for example, this religion, the Judeo-Christian, which is almost today as one, but it, let's say that you knock everything out from under people where they finally realize that it has all been made up for them, then you've created a vacuum. And if there isn't something to fill that vacuum, something real, then more garbage will just come into it.
Well, actually, you see that they have been creating the new religion, and they've been pushing it for quite a few years, and it's based on earth worship. Michael Gorbachev wrote a book, and it's called Towards a New Civilization. And in it, he said that he himself was an atheist. And later on in the book, he says, we, for the global society, are creating a new world religion. It will be based on earth worship, and it must be so. So there you go. You will watch the Buffy things on TV for years now. There's been witches programs on TV for years. So they're pushing all this stuff because this is a new religion, which is to move in and take over.
Are you using your headset phone?
Yeah.
I'm getting a popping.
Oh, it's too close to it.
In the microphone, yeah.
Yeah.
That could be why the volume is low, for me anyway. And I would like to be able to hear you on the tapes that I'm making.
Yeah.
So that it actually sounds like when they're getting into earth worship and that, almost that it's going back to the ancient religious times.
Yeah, because when you have a society run by one single power worldwide, you want total control of all lands and all people and all animals and everything else. And you want the people to believe they're just part of the same structure. You have the same value as any other animal. And your animals are your brothers and your sisters, etc., etc. And therefore, when the government wants to reduce your population, say, for instance, the people will do it gladly. In ancient times, they had the firstborn being killed every year, the firstborn.
Yes, and the new religion will probably go back to sacrifice, burnt sacrifices.
Well, the new religion in its higher degrees already does.
All right. Oh, okay. We're out of time here, Alan, and the music is playing.
Uh-huh.
And I understand that we are not able to be heard over the music. I want to thank you for being on with us this week, and I know we'll do some more, right? All right. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will see you back on Monday. I hope you have a delightful weekend and find peace amidst the noise and the hate and the chaos. God bless you. Good night, folks. Good night, Alan.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou.